Golf Smarter number 174 for members only on April 14, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Masters and more with Darren Bunch of Fairways and Greens magazine.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Day 19 and the airlines have yet to find my golf clubs. Okay, so this is kind of weird for me because even though I'm speaking directly to you as I always do, it really does feel like I'm sharing today's show with an intimate group of my closest golf buddies. Welcome to the first episode of Golf Smarter for Members Only. Thank you so much for becoming a member and supporting our continuing effort to make Golf Smarter the most entertaining and relevant golf podcast for every golfer not on tour. Over the years, I've learned that it's increasingly important to keep an eye on the stopwatch when I'm doing an interview. Many listeners are commuting or doing chores or working out, and once that task is complete, so's the show. But for you, I'm going to be focused on getting as much great content out of each guest as possible. Perfect example. Today's conversation with Darren Bunch lasts about an hour. Now, as a member, you're going to receive a free subscription of Fairways and Greens magazine, so I thought it'd be a great time to introduce you to one of their head honchos and, for me, to have someone to review the 2009 Masters. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Darren.
Hi, Fred.
How are you?
I'm very good. Good to be with you today.
Well, thank you very much. What a perfect time. It's springtime. Golf's in the air, and it's on TV. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm a kind of guy. I'm a golfer who wasn't raised on golf. I don't have generations of golfers in my family. I was the first one in my family to play. I started in my 40s. And so for me, golf is something I want to play. I don't necessarily understand the history, know all the history, nor do I want to spend a Sunday afternoon watching people play golf. I want to be out there playing myself. But the Masters seems to be different. When I say to people, "No, I'm not going to watch." Like, how can you not watch the Masters? The Masters is a completely different level. Is that true?
Yeah, I think the Masters is probably the one tournament that most people will watch. More often than not, I'm not positive whether it falls on Easter Sunday all the time, but it's one of those things that has a mystique. It certainly has a level of decorum that I think is different than all other sports. It's very reserved, but at the same time, the golf course itself is one of those kind of hack away and really try to do something spectacular type of golf courses. And at the same time, the greens are so diabolical that you really see the greatest players in the world doing absolutely crazy things, missing three footers and rolling balls off the green into water. And, with the case of Phil Mickelson yesterday, you watch the guy go out and just tear it up on the front nine, shoot 30.
Amazing.
Which was absolutely unbelievable. And then he came to the 12th hole and, put one in the water, as so many people have before him, and kind of unraveled from there. He never could putt after that. For some reason, I don't know why, hitting it in the water on 12 destroyed his putter for the rest of the round, but for some reason it did.
Yeah, that putt on 15, where it's all day long, it's, and maybe even all weekend long, it's like, yeah, that's in. Okay, just count it. It's a gimme. Was that a choke, or was that just classic Phil Mickelson?
Well, I don't know. I think the knock on Phil sometimes is that he overanalyzes things, and I think on the one you mentioned specifically, he kind of got thrown off by the fact that Tiger had putted right before him, mm-hmm. and Phil was looking at it one way and Tiger's ball went a different way, and he kind of got away from his initial read and just couldn't put the ball in the middle of the cup like he'd been doing. But, it becomes a jittery thing too, and the back nine at Augusta does crazy things. That's where the tournament starts, obviously, and we learned that with Phil because he played his way back into contention. And then, you know, it all unraveled. I mean, if he goes 3 under on the back nine, he wins that tournament easily. You know, because I don't think if Tiger or Phil are at the top of the leaderboard when Perry and Cabrera and those guys start coming in, certainly Cabrera doesn't play the way he did, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Well, so. Kenny Perry blew it. I mean, it was his to lose, as he said. It was mine to lose, and I lost.
Yeah, I think that guy, I mean, you got a feel for Kenny Perry.
Oh, my gosh.
I think he made 4 bogeys the entire week or something like that, and 2 of them came on the final 2 holes in regulation, and then obviously the one on the second playoff hole where he just, you know, the hook he plays normally got away from him, and that's what happens. You know, for me, it's you know, it was kind of bittersweet in a lot of ways. I love seeing him up there. I was rooting for Phil the whole day. I think there's something to be said for the Phil versus Tiger mystique, and I enjoyed that part of it. And I just don't believe Cabrera is one of the best players in the world, and the fact that he has 2 majors now confounds me.
Well, you know, if, going back to Phil for a minute, he's kind of like, I want to say, you know, that sibling that everybody has, you know, that you love the person so much, but you just are always rolling your eyes like, oh, God, there he goes again, you know, or a cousin, a close cousin. You just love this person and you're rooting for this person, but, oh, my God, he always does this to himself. Everybody has a family member like this.
Yeah, but I think there are 2 different camps with people who look at Phil. You know, I think there are people who absolutely love the way he plays. I mean, there is just he's just going to go out there and try to hit every shot he can. He is so close in a mentality state sometimes to those of us who are just the average guys who are going out and want to hit the best shot we can every time. And at the same time, there are those people who, like you said, are like, oh man, we just, come on, Phil, just, you know, rein it back in a little bit. But, you know, I'm of the camp that, you know, if Tiger Woods didn't exist, Phil Mickelson, we might talk about him the way we talk about Tiger. I mean, he would have won 5 more majors, I think, if there was no Tiger. And I believe, you know, he's a pretty good golfer as it is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's won a handful of majors, he's won a ton of tournaments. And I don't think you can take anything away from the style of golf he plays. That's the way he's been ever since he came onto the tour, and it's the way he's going to play until he dies. And it, you know, there aren't too many people who can quibble with the success rate he's had, because, you know, as we saw yesterday, he's capable of doing some incredible things. And you know, I won't be surprised if Phil wins 3 or 4 more majors before it's all done.
Yeah. Yeah, we frequently talk about the mental game here on the podcast, and it, to me, that as being somebody, I guess I recognize this now, as somebody who started to play later in life, the mental game is far more important. It's kind of like roller skating. If you roller skated as a kid, you can get on skates now and you just go. There's no worries whatsoever. But if you were, you know, if you were never comfortable on skates, or you started skating, you know, now, you know, in your 40s, 50s, whatever, you're terrified when you're out there. And I see Phil as being one of those golfers that the mental game is so different. It's like there is no chance for failure. Of course I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, and you know, he's a very creative player as well. I mean,
right.
He thinks of a lot of things. You know, a couple of years ago at the U.S. Open, when he put 2 drivers in the bag, that was unheard of, and you know, it almost made sense for him. And you know, I just think there's so much. I've done some pieces with the Callaway people in the research and development, and you know, those guys talk about, I mean, Phil gets in and rolls up his sleeve and really tries to figure out, hey, every edge he can possibly get. And, you know, he's doing that on the golf course too. But when you've hit as many shots as this guy has, and as many incredible shots, I mean, you've got a mental bank of these things that you've been able to do for years and years and years and years, dating back to even junior golf. You know, you look at a shot and you, yeah, we can do this. And, you know, you see Phil if he doesn't have to do it, sometimes you see him back off a little bit. But you know, everybody talks about losing the U.S. Open and banging one over the trees and getting into all kinds of trouble. And
on
I think
the hospitality
Jeff
tent.
Yeah, and I think Jeff Ogilvy won that year. And you know, but when I mean, the guy's been hitting the driver. It's his go-to club, you know, for good or bad. You know, I think I hit it on that spot too. I'm kind of a similar player to Phil in terms of I live and die by the driver. And so I know a lot of guys who understand Phil's mentality out on the golf course. You know, obviously that's certainly no comparison between me and Phil Mickelson. I want your listeners to get that straight, because there is no comparison whatsoever. But I mean, I can't understand it. And you got to admit, it makes for great golf. I mean, I absolutely, absolutely love watching him and watching him go for it. And when he self-destructs, I enjoy watching it, even though it's painful.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt that it's entertaining. And it brings up an interesting question. This was a memorable Masters, but what will be forgotten first? Will it be the fact that Cabrera won it on a two-hole playoff with a three-man playoff, or will the Tiger and Phil battle be forgotten first?
Oh, I think people will remember Tiger and Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people – I think Phil is the storyline of – for the average viewer. I mean, for the Golf Channel is going to tell you all about Cabrera and Kenny Perry. And had Kenny Perry won, it would have been an incredible story. You know, the oldest player to ever win it.
They kept reminding us of that.
Yeah, exactly. And but I think people will – first of all, even though most people didn't see most of Phil's 30 on the front nine, I think the mystique of that – will be remembered. And I think the fact that he had those two guys coming down the stretch, which is what everybody wants in golf. And the more times we can have Tiger and Phil playing each other, the better it is for the game.
Absolutely. It was absolutely fascinating, because here you had a guy going into the final round. You had the leaders at minus 11, right? At minus 12? No, they were at minus 11 going into Sunday. And they didn't budge from that. You thought, you know, even if Tiger and or Phil have a great round, the other guys are still going to be, you know, putting up birdies. And yet didn't. They just hung there and kind of like said, come on, you want it? Come and get it.
Yeah, and I think you find that with the leaders, especially people who haven't won a major or haven't won the Masters. You know, going out, it's a different mentality when you're in the lead. And I think it helped Chad Campbell in a way that he had the tough luck on 16 the day before and kind of fell a shot or two off the pace, because he wasn't in that final group. And he always knew, okay, I've got to make up ground. So he never laid back. You know, he knew, hey, I gotta keep pushing to get there. And that's what really propelled Phil and Tiger. You know, those guys knew, hey, we got to put up a big number. I mean, I think Tiger said afterward that he thought he had to post 12 under to have a chance. And, you know, it just that's what drives those guys. And then right. If you start making a couple of birdies, I mean, that's what we saw on the front with Phil. But on the flip side of that, if you start missing a couple of putts at Augusta on the back, it's like, forget about it. And then, I mean, you mentioned from a mental game standpoint and a course management standpoint, one of the things that I found fascinating, and this is the entire week, Nick Faldo hammered away about on the 18th hole at Augusta, anybody who's somewhat in contention should be hitting 3-wood off that tee. And because that way you lay up short of the bunkers, you take the bunkers completely out of play, and today's players are still hitting 7-iron at worst into that green. And you saw player after player after player put it in that bunker. I think Kenny Perry put it in the bunker at the end of the 18th hole, you know, on the 18th hole on the final day before the playoff. Obviously, Phil hit it in there and then hit, you know, for him, an atrocious bunker shot. That came out fat and ended up short, and he ended up making bogey there, which, you know, pretty much erased his chances then at that point if they weren't already. But I think that's a good lesson learned. And when we talk about the more people I talk about who are teaching golf, thinking about where your ball when you hit it properly is going to end up, especially off the tee, is a big thing that a lot of people just don't think about. You know, like I said, I live and die by the driver, but I'm trying to look at every hole and say, okay, if I hit my driver here, am I going to carry trouble? Am I going to end up right smack in the middle of trouble? Or am I going to, you know, lay back behind it? And if I do lay back on a shot, can I have an average iron into that hole, or does a layup mean I'm going to hit 4 iron into a hole, which then the risk isn't worth it? Makes me think of I just got back from a trip to Bandon, Oregon. And I've played Bandon Trails up there a few times, the Ben Crenshaw core course up there. And it has lots of cross bunkers across the fairways. And they are perfectly positioned, maybe more than any course I've ever played. And that if I'm playing from the proper set of tees for me, those cross bunkers are perfect in the extent of if I hit my drive really well, I will carry them. If I hit my drive just average or slightly less than average, I will be in those bunkers every time. And I think that's the mark of a good golf course. And if you can, you know, going back to the Masters, in that there was an easy solution, and clearly it was a solution that wasn't hard to figure out, because Nick Faldo, although he analyzes for a living now, I mean, he said it over and over and over and over again, and I was amazed at the number of people who then went ahead, took driver off the tee there in an effort to try to hit pitching wedge into that green, and instead put it in that bunker and put themselves in danger.
Well, and this golf course, interestingly enough, of the four majors, it's the only one that is played on the same – this major is played on the same course year in and year out. So it has so many amazing stories that go with it, and it's, you know, all about the golf course.
Oh yeah, and I think you saw some blasts from the past. Certainly, even in this Masters, I mean, Larry Mize made the cut. You know, he's best known for winning it in '87 when he chipped in to beat Greg Norman. Greg Norman, you know, is playing probably the best golf he's played in years recently, and you know, got it around decently in the first couple days. You know, Gary Player played in his last one and finished up on Friday. Fuzzy Zeller as well. So, I mean, there's so much history, and the beauty of the Masters, too, I think, in some ways, is that those past champions and invites and people like that that the committee allows to play, you know, just remind you of everything that's going on. And then you've got ESPN now televising the Par 3 Challenge on Wednesday, which is another just absolutely great event. If you love golf and you love golf personalities and that kind of thing, you know, it's almost better to watch the par three than it is to watch the opening round, in my opinion. And ESPN's doing a great job with that. And there were so many ways to watch the Masters this year that were amazing. I mean, people out there have iPhones now. There's a Masters app that had live video from Amen Corner and holes 15 and 16. You could watch it online in virtually high def. I know DirecTV runs those same feeds from Amen Corner. So there's so much mystique, and there's so much that people know, and you know, especially about Amen Corner and what it's done to people. I mean, the 11th hole is absolutely brutal. You know, and when Phil came through it yesterday and made par there, I was like, oh man, I, you know, breathe a sigh of relief. I was like, oh, he started off aiming corner. He got through 11. That's great. And then of course, you know, he dunks in the water on the next hole, and it's like, oh, well, that's why it's Amen Corner, not just Amen 11th hole.
And where did that name come from? How did it get the name Amen Corner?
I wish I knew that for you, but I'm not enough of a Masters historian to know.
but I found it really interesting as well that the playoff looked more like a round of golf that I would have been involved in. It was like, now I get what these guys are doing. They're coming up short. They're hitting in the, you know, they're hitting inside the trees. They're bouncing off of trees. I mean, it was like, now this is golf I recognize.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I texted my my publishing partner, Vic Williams, on that first playoff hole and said the exact same thing. I said, it looks like me and you out there on a late afternoon.
Oh, good. We can play together.
Trying to bring it home. I mean, Chad Campbell hit it in the bunker and Perry knocked it off to the right and Cabrera was in the trees bouncing it around. And it was it was craziness. And the fact that, they all got up and down was just, unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, that's the difference between me and you, me and you and these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is, we're putting up five or six out of those situations and those guys all save par, I expected Kenny Perry to save par at the second hole, the second playoff hole too. And,
yep.
But for kind of hit a little bit of a skipper and, even those guys putt so well that you just never know.
Right. And that putt, he made on the second playoff hole, it looked like it was going in. But you had to believe his knees were just rattling.
Oh, yeah. And I mean,
he knew where he was.
I think those guys were shaky, from 15 on. And to see some of the shots that they did hit, I thought Kenny Perry had won the tournament when he hit the shot on the par 3 16th. I mean, he just buried it, put it, 2 feet from the hole.
Oh, that was gorgeous.
And I just thought, oh, well, okay, now he's won, and then it just fell apart with those two bogeys.
Like us, you have a great hole. Like a couple of weeks ago, I got my first hole in one and the next hole I double bogeyed. It's like,
I mean, if you want to trade those stories, I mean, I've eagled a hole and put a 9 up on the next.
Oh.
And so I mean, yeah, the average guy has those kinds of stories galore. I lived in Las Vegas on a golf course, Rhodes Ranch, out there, and I think I closed around where I was only like 6 over, and I closed it with 2 9s and a triple. So, I mean, just started, sometimes a driver does crazy things. You start hitting it, hooking it left, and you can do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Unfortunately, it's so true for all of us.
That's right.
But Gary Player was a great story, and he's a great Masters story, but just to see him out there and, what did he end up, 12, 15 over at the end?
I don't remember what his score was. I don't usually follow those guys too much.
Well, they don't let you.
The fact of the matter was that he was there, he was playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gary Player's playing some just phenomenal golf for his age. He's in his mid-70s.
Wow.
He shot his age, I think, 5 times so far on the Champions Tour this year. He's doing incredible things. And now, he's designing golf courses. In fact, down in Mexico, Costa Baja and La Paz, Mexico, he's got a new course opening down there. The guy can still do more push-ups than, I think I've done in my lifetime. he's a blast to watch. And my guess is he still practices more every day than 99% of the country does as well. He's a phenomenal story. I understand the golf course is longer and he's hitting it shorter every year. But I really think if anybody could get it around there until they were 80, it might have been Gary Player.
Hmm. Hmm. I don't know if in Fairways and Greens magazine you guys make predictions or try to speculate or create a pool or anything, but I did read the Sports Illustrated Masters issue, and they had a roundtable conversation with some writers and former writers and an anonymous pro, and everyone picking who they thought they were going to win. And while I was watching yesterday, and I was not able to watch it live, so I DVR'd the whole thing and watched the first 9 holes about an hour after it started, and then had to go out for, big family dinner, and then came back and watched till 11:30 last night. But I, as I was watching the last couple holes after Tiger and Phil had finished, I pulled out that Sports Illustrated Masters issue to see what they were predicting. And nobody that they picked was there.
Yeah, I was going to say, did anybody pick Angel Cabrera?
No. Or Chad Campbell. You know, they were picking, you know, Jeff Ogilvie's name kept coming up. Phil's name kept coming up, and, you know, granted, he, you know, he's, and of course everyone goes, well, you got to pick Tiger if you're going to pick two people, right? But, right. Does this not teach anybody? You really can't gamble on this or do pools. It's, what's the point?
Oh, I think it's, yeah. I mean, like I said, my publishing partner, Vic Williams, is in a, golf fantasy league. And it was pure torture for him the whole week because it's one of those leagues where he can change out players daily. And and so the first day he went with Phil and Tiger had a better day. And so the second day he went with Tiger and Phil had a better day. And the third day they were roughly equal. And then on the last day he went with Tiger and Phil beat him. So, you know, it's hard to figure it out. You know, if anybody, you know, just you mentioned Chad Campbell.
What a great start they had. He's the first guy ever to open with five consecutive birdies, right?
Yeah, and he was one of those guys who I was rooting for because, like I said with Cabrera, I just don't like to see guys win majors who I just don't believe are the real deal. Mm-hmm. I felt that way about Jeff Ogilvie for a while because he had kind of backed into some of his wins, but now he's won some. And, you know, I've been wrong about other people. I felt that way about Retief Husson, and, you know, he's proved otherwise. But Chad Campbell, I mean, should already have a PGA championship. I mean, he got beat by, you know, Sean McKeel, who just played out of his mind in pretty much the only round of golf, tournament that this guy's ever going to just peek up his head in, you know. And so I've always thought, well, man, Chad should have won that one. And I told somebody yesterday, I said, if Chad Campbell wins this thing, you know, the golf gods owe this guy. Because he is a great ball striker. He's had some really good runs. But at the same time, you know, he's been under the radar. And there have been a lot of guys who just kind of along their playing, you know. I thought going in the tournament, Anthony Kim would have a huge tournament. And it turns out he had a huge day. But just couldn't string it together.
Right.
You know, so there are so many players capable of winning right now. I think if you had to put money on it, you'd be putting your money on Phil or Tiger. But you're right. You can't possibly pick from amongst the rest of the field who's going to win. And, you know, it's a crapshoot if you do. And the funny thing was, too, you know, nobody gave Phil a chance. You know, it was all about Tiger. Tiger's back from the knee. Tiger's rolling now.
He won the week before.
Yeah, he's playing well. He had that tremendous comeback at Bay Hill against Sean O'Hare, who's another, I think, brilliant upcoming player. In fact, a funny story. A couple years ago, I was in a video conference with Tiger, and somebody asked him about up-and-coming players. And, you know, Tiger's not really the kind of guy who wants to talk about the competition in any way, but he did say one thing in response to the question. He said, "You know, the one player I really like out here who is really coming up, and he's been through a lot in his life, is Sean O'Hare. I really enjoy getting out playing a practice round with him, and I think he's really going to do well on the PGA Tour." And so it's been interesting over the 2 years since then to really see O'Hare, you know, grow as a player. And realized, well, you know, Tiger saw this coming, and, you know, then to bring it full circle where, you know, Tiger essentially, it looked like a, you know, an episode of Punked or something out there, what he did to him at Bay Hill. So it, you know, but I mean, it was all about Tiger, and Phil was playing, you know, so poorly. He shot 77 to open the week before, and, you know, he wasn't supposed to have a chance. And I always think that's good for Phil. You know, if he comes in under the radar, I think he's going to be, you know, he always, you know, it's less pressure and he can really, you know, take it to the course and not be thinking about the media and everything else. And you know, this battle with Tiger that we all want to see. But those guys, I don't think care about nearly as much. They just want to win. They don't care who it's against.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting because there's these young phenoms that are coming up that they're talked about now, the Rory McIlroy. But it seems like to watch the Masters and to see that golf course just become the number one adversary. Forget Tiger, forget Phil. You're really playing against that golf course. That maturity plays such a huge part in success. But, you know, talking about how your feelings towards Cabrera, and he really, it was almost the tortoise and the hare. He was just the last guy standing. It's not like he beat anybody, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he kept playing and he played consistently. And, you know, I heard some people on the radio last night make a really good argument for, you know, the fact that Cabrera won the tournament, not the other guys lost it. And I think you can argue that both ways, but sure. You're right. He was consistent. He hits it down the middle for the most part, you know, the 18th hole being the exception. And when he gets it going, he's capable of doing some things. And the pressure doesn't get to him, you know, maybe as much as it does somebody else. I don't know why. Maybe it's...
There was a couple of holes towards the end there that it looks like it was getting to him.
Yeah, but I mean,
he had some bad shots, and you saw him, his walk was changed, his meter was different. Yeah, it was getting to him.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the U.S. Open the same way. I mean, he was able to scramble at home and hit some good shots along the way. I mean, obviously, you got to give this guy credit for knocking it where he did on the second playoff hole.
Yeah.
And, you know, he hit a really good drive on the 18th on the first playoff hole, which was, you know, something that's tough to do when you just played that hole 20 minutes ago and you banged it in the trees. So, I mean, you got to give the guy credit, obviously. It's
sure,
just,
of course.
It's just one of those things that
he's
I look
got the
at
jacket.
And I'm like,
when it's all said and done, he's wearing the jacket.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those things that I'm not out there rooting for Angel Cabrera because, you know, I want to see people, especially win the majors. I think there's a small handful of guys, or I want to see up and coming players who are going to be part of that small handful of guys. And, you know, Cabrera just doesn't fit that bill for me. But, you know, you can't take away the fact the guy's got two majors now and probably the two, what most people would contend to be the two toughest ones to win, the U.S. Open and the Masters.
Yep, absolutely.
And the maturity factor you mentioned, you know, is why you see players from the past be in contention so much. You know, you look at the leaderboards and, you know, Golf Channel replays the Masters from past years and if you're ever looking in the early rounds of those tournaments when they show the leaderboards, it's all huge names. And it's why you see somebody like Larry Mize do what he did this week. And in the past, why you've seen Tom Watson rear his head and why Nicklaus was able to win it at such an old, you know, advanced age. Because you have to really understand the greens and where to hit the ball. And, you know, the different sectors of each green and how to stay away from the stuff that can really kill you. And, you know, there are people out there, you talk about the golf course itself, you know, they started growing rough. I don't know how long ago, how many years back it was. And they lengthened it and they did all these things. And I'm okay with the length part. But I would like to see them play the golf course without any rough again, because I think it would add even more to this sense of, okay, let's just rip it off the tee and then let our short clubs do what they have to do, whether we're hitting it out of the pine straw or from behind trees or whatever. You know, to me, the rough is inconsequential. I guess it adds a little bit more. It helps, you know, it keeps them from spinning the ball as well and that kind of thing. But I think we'd see even more miraculous shots, and the excitement level could be even higher if they return to no rough. I mean, still leave the length. You got to have the length for today's players. Otherwise, you know, Boo Weekly would be driving the 18th hole.
So what's wrong with that?
In fact, Dustin Johnson hit one, I guess it was Friday, you know, where he hit L wedge or pitching wedge or something like that into the 18th. I mean, he just absolutely smoked one. And I was listening to it on XM Radio's broadcast, and the the guys in the booth said, well, this can't possibly be Dustin's drive. And the on-course reporter said, yeah, it is. You know, so, you know, that kind of thing is cool. And, I mean, you ask what's wrong with that. I guess nothing's wrong with it. But
would that not make it more interesting if a guy's like, if they're getting hole-in-one on a par four, if they were able to get there?
I mean, it might, but at the same time, I don't think
the respect
people,
for the game.
Well, the people at Augusta are never going to allow,
they're not.
You know, a pitch and putt for the closing hole of the Masters. You know, that's why it's got all that length behind it, and there are still some holes that, you know, guys can hit it up close on, and there are some great golf courses throughout the throughout the tour, where there are drivable par fours that are very exciting and lots of fun to watch. So I just don't think Augusta wants to be that. But the rough, I think they could do without. I don't think it needs it.
Interesting. I want to go back for one statement you made a little while ago about Chad Campbell and saying that, you know, the golf gods owe this guy. I don't think there's a person listening right now who doesn't believe that the golf gods owe us too. I just want you to know that every one of us who've ever walked a golf course, ridden in a golf cart, picked up a putter, or any iron in their bag, believe that the golf gods don't owe us.
Oh, and I can't disagree with that.
Okay, good.
You know, I play a quite a bit of poker as well, and I think the two parallel nicely. Not that I intended that to be a segue into that we have a golf and poker issue of fairways and greens coming up in June, July. But
nice, good job.
But I do think that there are similarities. You know, that golf, you know, is a rub of the green type of game, and some days you get bad breaks, some days you get good breaks. You know, some days you feel like you're putting just out of your mind and they're all going in, and some days you feel like you're putting out of your mind and they're all burning the edges. And, you know, it's just, it's craziness. But so I think the golf gods definitely owe us from time to time. And you know, just like I said, I guess the poker gods, if there is such a thing, you know, probably owe me for a few hands that have gone awry, you know, over the last year. But speaking of that, though, you know, Padraig Harrington had an absolutely horrendous call go against him the other day, where he got up over the ball and the wind was blowing, you know, really strong. Got up over the ball, he stepped away, he started his routine again, and he hadn't sold the club a second time after restarting his routine, and the wind blew the ball, and he had to go get a ruling, and the ruling was, hey, you've sold the club, and it's going to be a one-stroke penalty. I think sometimes we go too far overboard with the rules, and I'm a big rules guy. You know, I count all my shots, and, you know, I believe that the only way you know how you can improve is to count everything you're doing, count all your penalty shots, you know, and take what you shoot on a given day. You know, I'm not a guy who, you know, oh, that 8-footer's for double, so, you know, it's good type of thing, at least in my own game. Sometimes I give those to other people, but, you know, I think this was a case where the rules got out of whack. I mean, he sold his club, but he clearly stepped away and restarted his routine. And I think that should be a reset, because, you know, almost a minute and a half had gone by from the time he sold his club to the time the wind moved the ball. There's no way that a guy should be charged for a penalty like that. And actually, I was really rooting for Park to have a big day the next day, and have a chance to win it just for that reason, because,
sure,
you know, so often you see these guys kind of get screwed with a call like that, in all sports, and then turn around and really respond and go nuts and you know, make a run for the title. So,
well, I've talked multiple times that I am a fan of the rules to a certain extent. I you know, we've had the commissioner of the sort of golf association on here,
okay,
and the SGA. And he's got his seven rules that he calls the golfer's bill of rights and you and I can talk about this, and people can go back and listen, especially because this show is for our members-only audience. They can go back into the archives and listen to this. It's a lot of fun, and actually there's some stuff in there that makes a lot of sense. I personally believe that the USGA's rules are... They're advocates for the golf course, not the golfer, and I have a problem with that.
Well, I can see that. I mean, I think one of the problems we have with the rules in general, and I don't mean this as a problem, but one of the things that's going to keep them from being changed is that
the guys who are running it.
Well, and everybody who's come before, I mean, there's a lot of tradition in golf.
No question.
And so the fact that, you know, the OB rules and the water rules and those things have been, set forth for years and years and years and years, and everybody's played them that way, means that they're going to be played that way for years and years and years more. Now, to me, it's the subtlety type of rules that I think we could do without, Paul Azinger with, whatever goofy thing happened to him a while back, where he had manufactured a stance allegedly, or somebody falls, falls on their ass in the bunker, hitting a shot and the ball's still in the bunker. Then they take a penalty because their club hit the ground. You know, there's just lots of stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
Craig Stadler, for crying out loud, was just trying to keep his pants from getting muddy when he put that towel down, at Torrey Pines the year. And then he got a penalty because he manufactured a stance, and, it's just, all kinds of stupid stuff like that.
Well, then they tell us that there's they don't want to make two sets of rules where there should be, there's no separate rules for the PGA Tour, right? And yet the latest rule on the grooves on the wedges is definitely that.
Yeah, and I just think I don't think you have to make two sets. I just think there are some rules that you could repeal, and you could stop this what I think is this ridiculous trend of the rules hawks calling in during PGA events. Obviously, somebody called in. I mean, Michelle Wee might be the best example of, she got screwed on one of those types of deals where, admittedly, she makes a mistake. They review it while she's on the golf course the next day, and then she gets basically, I think she was within a shot of the lead at the end of the next day, and they come and say, by the way, you're disqualified for something you did yesterday.
Oh, that was for not signing the card while she was...
Oh, that's
what
it was.
Yeah, she didn't sign
exactly.
The card at the exact right moment.
She signed the card outside of the scoring tent.
Yeah, right.
And, you've got to
come on, get the club out of your butt. Right?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Fred.
Take that driver out of your butt.
Very nice. Yeah, it's crazy. And so that kind of just goofy, stupid stuff, I think, we could the game could do without, and I think people would be just as happy. I think there's a...
You realize we're going to get letters on this. People
we're
are going to
get.
How can you question the rules?
I'm sure we'll get all kinds of people who chime in and
please do. I will forward them to Darren. And send your complaints to Hey Fred at Golf Smarter.
And while we're at it, while we've got people complaining. I'll add this to that mix of goofy rules. Okay, golf is a gentleman's game, is what we say.
Okay,
we call penalties on ourselves.
Mm-hmm. No referees.
Honesty and integrity are the most important aspects of the game, and I firmly believe that. But if that's the truth, then why, for your USGA handicap, do we need to have equitable stroke control parameters placed on what you can post for a score? Are you following me with that?
No.
Okay, so I go out and I shoot 85.
Okay.
okay? But I make a 9 on one hole. Equitable stroke control says I can only, depending on my handicap, I can only take I can only card a 6 or a 5 depending on my handicap.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is for that is that some people don't sandbag.
Right. They don't inflate their handicap so for competition they
exactly.
Can, right. Okay.
But that premise of putting parameters in that you can only card a score, because I may have legitimately made a 9. In fact, I wrote a column about making about a round I played in Mississippi last year where I put up a 12. And 12
and
it might have been a 13. I mean, I wrote a whole column about one hole. But that premise of equitable stroke control and keeping people from sandbagging is at direct odds with the idea that
of honesty and integrity.
Of honesty and integrity. Yeah.
Excellent
I mean, I put
point.
Up a, if I put up a 13, it's a 13. It's real. You know, I wish it weren't. You know, I wish I hadn't hit 2 out of bounds and 2 into the water on the approach and 4 putted or whatever, you know, the case was. But
that's the fact. That's what you did.
It is.
You're absolutely right. Because I've always said, well, yeah, I got an 8 on that. Well, you can only take a 7 because you're handicapped. What?
Yeah.
Really?
And it's the
same.
Then
why am
same...
I putting? Just give me the 7. I'm leaving.
Yeah. And it's the same premise with these rules about manufacturing a stance and all those kinds of things that, I mean, the average golfer, I don't think is out there, especially the average professional golfer, is not out there looking for the edge. They're just trying to position themselves in a way to make the best swing they can. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's one thing if, I mean, a guy gets out there with a saw and saws off a limb, you know, of a tree or something like that to create something. Well, okay. You know, but I think there's a line there that we all know when it's been crossed and when it hasn't. For example, I think it was absolutely wrong for Tiger to be able to move that big boulder in Arizona.
A couple years ago. Yeah.
I think that was beyond the rules, but yet because the way the rules are, it fell into the rules. Whereas somebody else who, you know, who does the wrong thing with their feet or, you know, swishes the sand wrong, you know, and then gets, you know, tagged with testing the density of the sand, you know, then those guys get penalized. And too often than not, they get penalized. They don't realize it. Then they sign an incorrect scorecard and then they get DQ'd. And I think that's really, really
right. Right. Yeah. But you know that those 3 or 4 guys that helped Tiger move that boulder, they are not running around going, I was the guy that helped Tiger cheat.
No. They're the guys who were helping him make par or whatever he did on that hole.
Exactly.
Yeah, we helped Tiger win the tournament, or we helped Tiger whatever, you know. Yeah, exactly.
So one of the benefits that a couple of the benefits that the Golf Smarter members only receive by signing up, and thank you very much for signing up, is that, first of all, my stopwatch broke, and so if this goes longer than the normal 30 minutes that we do, so what? So you're going to listen to it over a couple of days. But the other thing is that they receive a subscription, a 6-month subscription to Fairways and Greens magazine, your magazine. And I wanted to take the opportunity for you to introduce everybody, because not everybody may know about your magazine, because it's perceived as a regional magazine, and the podcast clearly is not. We have members all over the world now. And again, thank you. I really do appreciate it. But if you can tell us something before you tell us about Fairways and Greens magazine, I have to say, and people listening who've been listening, they know that I've recently lost my golf clubs because the airlines just lost my golf clubs. And in my bag was my Fairways and Greens hat.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I love that hat because it said FG on it. So, hey, a hat with my own initials. This is so cool.
I'm sure we can find you another hat, Fred.
Oh, good. Can we get another one to send to a listener?
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure we can find a hat to send to a listener as well.
All right. We're gonna before this show's over, we'll announce the name of a winner of somebody who's getting a Fairways and Greens hat to go along with their subscription. But introduce us, please, to Fairways and Greens magazine.
Well, Fairways and Greens has been around for 11 years. And in its present form, we cover golf, travel, and lifestyle for the West and beyond. And,
let's emphasize beyond.
Well, yeah, well, we're based out here on the West Coast, and I mean, our core coverage is that we're covering golf on the West Coast. We also do a lot of celebrity stuff. We do a little bit of tournament event coverage out here. We don't do a lot of instruction. Mainly because there's so many good magazines out there that do instruction way better than we can, that it's not in our wheelhouse, and we prefer to stick to more to travel and lifestyle, which is more what we do best. The cool thing, though, is that as we began to market the magazine outside of the West, we started running into a lot of people, especially people where it's frozen during half the year, who absolutely love reading Fairways and Greens, reading about what's going on where they are playing golf when these folks unfortunately aren't. And then a lot of people, the West Coast, we boast, two of the best golf draws in the country, in Pebble Beach and Bandon Dunes. Las Vegas is allegedly the entertainment capital of the world. Southern California, Los Angeles, California itself, all big tourism draws. So there are people all across the country who are planning trips to the West all the time, and they subscribe to Fairways and Greens for that very reason, to read all about what's out here and what's available, what they can do, what new is coming, and then we do a lot of personality pieces as well. In fact, Casey Martin, kind of an update is of where he's at as the University of Oregon golf coach now.
And then, wait, Casey Martin's the guy that played with Tiger at Stanford and had that Supreme Court ruling. Is that correct?
Correct. Hey, yeah. Lucky. He played with Tiger. Tiger and Nota Begay were both on that Stanford team that won one NCAA championship and almost won a second. And then Casey has was born with a degenerative circulatory problem in his leg, and had to sue the PGA Tour essentially to let him drive one of those little one-person carts from shot to shot under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and won, and played a little bit of golf on the tour, and now he's the head golf coach at University of Oregon.
Very good.
Doing well. I mean, they've got a kind of a freshman, I don't know if it's four freshmen or five freshmen, who are really on the ball. They just won an event out here at Paso Tiempo in Santa Cruz. And so it's a really good story. It also, we're talking about golfing with disabilities in general. I had the opportunity to play to interview a young lady who's on scholarship here at Cal State Bakersfield. And she plays golf with a prosthetic leg and plays it well enough to be on scholarship for the team. And she's a pretty remarkable young woman, does a lot of other good stuff. Her name's Katie Walker. She also helps out with Shriners Hospital. And so she's a spokesperson at the PGA event in Las Vegas now, which is hosted by Justin Timberlake and benefits Shriners Hospitals for Children. So
that's a great story.
Yeah,
What's the best part of her game? I'm curious. Where does she excel in her game?
I actually thought from the start, that maybe she would have learned differently than the rest of us and really worked on her short game first. But her learning curve was pretty much just like the rest of us. I mean, she lost her leg. She was born without a tibia, lost her leg early on, and so all she's ever known is having a prosthetic leg. And so, she did her share of falling and getting back up and decided when she wanted to get into competitive sports, it was pretty much swimming or golf. She chose golf, which is a good thing because obviously golf's taken her all over the country But, you know, she was like any of us, you know, she started swinging and just wanted to hit the ball as hard as she possibly could. It's her left leg and she plays left-handed. So basically the prosthetic leg takes the brunt of her weight as she goes back. And then she turns through. And the odd thing is her knee will only hinge. It won't twist like most of us will. So she really does some serious coiling with her body in the midsection that with my 240-pound frame, I can only imagine. but that's the difference between, you know, a 100-pound girl and 240-pound man. They can they're a lot more flexible.
Let me also guess, you probably got a couple years on her.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, fine.
20, yeah. 20 or so.
Well, I didn't want to go that far, but yeah.
But yeah, she you know, she coils and releases and she has a really nice swing and she's just she does a good thing. She's not, you know, she's probably not going to go play golf professionally after college.
But and she could coach just like Casey.
Well, exactly, and she didn't expect to play golf collegiate golf. But basically the college in Bakersfield where she lives came to her and said, "Hey, you had a pretty good season. Your senior year of high school, why don't you come play for us on scholarship?" And she was like, "Wow. Oh, you know, college comes and offers you a scholarship to play golf. You can't say no to that."
No.
So that's what she does, and it she's really parlayed it into a lot of other things, and she does some good stuff. Well, the coincidental thing about talking about the mental game and those things is she said, although she, you know, just wanted to hit it hard when she was learning, that really now in competitive collegiate golf, she realizes it's all about ups and downs. I mean, she spends the majority of her time with the pitching and chipping clubs and the putter, because if you're not hitting your irons right on and you're missing greens, you've got to get up and down and make par. So it's, you know, it's a good lesson for most of us.
Great. And so that's in the current issue of Fairways and Greens?
Yes, that's in the April-May issue, which just came out.
Okay, but I don't think that our listeners are going to be – well, yeah, I guess they will. We're going to get you the list of names. Every couple of weeks we're going to be sending you a list of new people who joined for members only, and I guess they'll be getting that issue soon, I hope.
We will actually do a special mailing of that issue for your members, or we might package – that and the June-July issue together.
Oh, okay. So they'll get a couple issues together. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that would be cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, again, thanks so much for your participation in Golf Smarter and allowing our listeners to learn more about your magazine and sharing it with them. We hope they become long-time subscribers, because I do know that people do travel when they play golf. As a matter of fact, Christian, I know you're listening. I got an email from a listener last year saying, "I heard you mention that you played golf with listeners sometimes, and would you mind playing golf with me when I'm on holiday?" And I'm like, "Sure, no problem." And so this guy's like, "Well, yeah, I'm coming into San Francisco from London." It's like, "You're kidding. And you want to play golf with me? Why would you do that?"
I was going to say, when you said on holiday, I was going to say, obviously he's coming from overseas. Somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, he came. And then I'm going to expose him here, but I was really shocked when I met him on the golf course, and he was 24 years old. I thought he was going to be an old guy like one of us. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, I can appreciate that. But no, and we had a great time, and I'm looking forward to seeing him again when he comes back out. And we played Harding Park in San Francisco, which will host the President's Cup this year, and we had a great time.
Wow, very good.
Very cool. Very cool. So thanks again for your participation and for supporting Golf Smarter.
Well, we enjoy it, and we're glad to be partnering with you, and we're glad to be putting the magazine in new people's hands, and hopefully everybody will love it. And we're also launching a new website that in a few weeks here, we'll start its soft launch, and we'll be offering all kinds of new and inventive things on the web as well. So
very cool.
We're pretty excited.
Well, good luck, and you know, we'll check in with you guys on a regular basis. We'll get Vic to come in and tell some of his stories about you, as you did with him, and we'll talk to you guys and we'll stay in touch with you a lot.
Fair enough.
All
thanks
right,
a lot,
Darren. Is so wait now? You're the editor, or you're the publisher?
I am the publishing partner and senior editor of Fairways and Greens magazine.
Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks again.
Oh, you can tell that I'm really into long goodbyes. You know, after we recorded this show yesterday, I got an interesting email from the Chivas Iron Society about their Masters pool. And we weren't kidding when we said betting on a golf tournament like the Masters is a dumb gamble. Here's a sample of their results, okay? There was 126 entries were received, including the names of 51 different players among the four selections. They were able to pick, you know, first, second, third, and fourth. Now, the 2000 Masters champion, Angel Cabrera's name, was not among the 51 selected. Chad Campbell was only included in one entry, and he was picked as a number three finisher. Kenny Perry was included in six entries, only one for first and two for second. Phil Mickelson, okay, he was on 48 entries. Tiger Woods was selected on 111 entries. 74 people picked him for first. That's kind of obvious, right? But among the other top 10 finishers, names of Shingo Katayama, Steve Flesch, and John Merrick didn't appear on a single entry. Steve Stricker was on 11, Jim Furyk was on 12, Sean O'Hare was on 9, and Hunter Mahan was on 4. Other players who received significant interest? How about this? Jeff Ogilvie, who many people were picking to win this thing, was included on 52 entries out of 126. Patrick Harrington, only on 38 entries. So, listen, the next time you need to pore over stats before making your pick on an upcoming major, ask your dog. He has just as good a chance at picking a winner as you do. Over the past week, I've added some new features to GolfSmarter.com. And I know that I mentioned last week our YouTube channel, but I've changed it to GolfSmarter TV. Duh. So all of my golf video production is in one place. And in addition to being on YouTube at youtube.com/GolfSmarterTV, I've even added my collection of golf swings of people I've played with. So just in case you think you suck, check out these guys, and you'll quickly learn, especially after watching Kenny Perry and Jim Furyk for a weekend, that there is no perfect swing. It's all about where you are at contact with the ball, and I believe your mental game. Find all these videos by clicking on Golf Smarter TV right at golfsmarter.com. And listen, if you have a video you want produced, please think of me. That's what I want to do. I got to supplement this thing somehow. Hey, congratulations, James Emmon of Oklahoma City. You've just won a Fairways and Greens hat. We talked about you, and you are the one who wins it. We also have been talking about the winners for the extra boxes of Dixon Earth golf balls. We're going to pick five winners, and two of them will announce today, which are Regis Grattan of Shikshini, Pennsylvania, and Scott Berg of Beechwood, Ohio. You've each won a extra box of Dixon Earth golf balls. We'll announce more winners on next week's show, which will be a free episode. But I got more to tell you about that in a second. But just so you know, per the request of Dixon Earth, I'm providing them with an updated list of our members every couple of weeks so that they can send out your complimentary box with the Golf Smarter logo. Hey, here's something that's just happened only a few minutes ago that you may want to be aware of for those of you living in the western part of the United States. On April 25th, 26th, and 27th is the 34th annual Hagen Oaks Golf Expo in Sacramento. Now, named by Golf World, Golf Digest, and Golf Range magazines as the best golf promotion in the entire country. This year, they're doubling the amount of complimentary hitting stalls available to the public, have over 150 different manufacturers and booths scheduled to appear. The Hagen Oaks Golf Expo is truly, what I've read off of GolfWorks, the show of all shows, hosting over 17,000 golfers over the three-day event. Well, Fairways and Greens magazine is going to have a tent set up there, and I'll be there to meet you on Saturday from noon to 3. Now, even if you can't stop by to say hello to me, make sure you stop by and register to win a free pair of Alias golf shoes from Alias Footwear. These are the most comfortable shoes I have ever worn on the golf course. Imagine a pair of golf shoes, a hiking boot, and combine them with the comfort of slippers, and you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I'll pick a winner on Saturday afternoon, but I'd love for you to stop by and say hello. Again, I'll be there Saturday, April 26th from noon to 3 at the Hagen Oaks Golf Expo. We close today's marathon with this day in golf history only because of the part of the conversation that Darren and I had about the rules and this week's winner, Angel Cabrera. It was April 14th, 1968, when Roberto de Vincenzo of Argentina celebrated his birthday while battling for a championship at the Masters. He and Robert Golby finished on Sunday tied with scores of 277. Unfortunately, de Vincenzo wrote the wrong number on his scorecard when he birdied number 17 but wrote down a par, and then accidentally signed the card which read the final score of 278. Roberto was robbed of a chance for a playoff, and Golby was declared the winner. Next week, one of our most popular guests ever finally makes his return, Fred Shoemaker of Extraordinary Golf. It's another hour-long interview that you will hear intact, but the people listening to the free version will only get about 20 minutes. Now, to send me your comments, suggestions, requests, or quotes, scroll over the feedback tab to find Hey Fred at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.